Members of Mass Education Project are Hotel Representative Cindy Stewart, Representative Mike Brown, Representative Tiffany Zobrowski, Representative Brian Hopkins, Representative Ron Dillon, and myself, Hotel Representative Carrie Drummond. We have a call to conduct business, and before I begin, we'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones today. Our remote recording secretary is Sophia Kinney. Thank you both. Today we will be hearing one bill, House Bill 43, extending the Special Education Service Agency, sponsored by Michael Chair, Representative Andy Sari. Would you please come forward and put your name and affiliation on the record?
Good morning, Chair Drummond and members of the House Education Committee. I'm going to be sworn representing District 34 here in Valley and Jail. Thank you this morning for considering House Bill 43, an act extending the termination date of the Special Education Service Agency, often referred to as CSEA. This is the term I will refer to going forward. CSEA provides a highly vital service to the children, youth, and families of all states. The agency's purpose is to provide special education supports and services to children who experience rare or complex disabilities. They do this work with professionalism and thoughtfulness. As those of support, legislative audit surveys, and public testimony clearly will show. Very briefly, House Bill 43 extends the sunset date of CSEA to June 30th, 2029, ensuring continuation of high-quality, efficiently delivered services for students with severe disabilities in Alaska. CSEA is a public agency established in 1986 under Alaska Statute 14.30.600. CSEA was created to assist school districts in serving children with low incidence, mean, less common disabilities. In doing so, it allows students to be educated in their own communities without having to travel to receive specialized services. It also assists school districts in meeting federal individual with disabilities education act requirements. The 2020 audit conducted by the Legislative Budget and Audit Division concludes that CSEA serves the public interest and recommends an extension of 8 years, the maximum allowed by statute. Chris Curtis, the legislative auditor, is here and will address the 2020 audit report in greater detail. We will also hear from CSEA's executive director, Patrick Billet, and a cross section of individuals and school officials who have utilized the services of CSEA. Staff from the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development are unable to be here today due to a state board meeting that's being held, so we will defer the walkthrough of the fiscal note for the next time we hear the bell. I'd now like to turn this over to our staff, Mary Cockerell, to walk through of the bill packet that you have before you, and then we will answer questions on later on. Thank you.
And I'm going to have a staff director of the story. And I'm going to work for the packet that I put into your packet that Andy Murray, who reported to your offices and external personnel basis, and it's also used here electronically. So first, you've got the bill. And then, following that, you have a class statement. And I just like to reiterate one of the statements I hear about the terms of the bill. Because it plays a key role in providing the matrix of support services required by federal and state law to serve high-need special education students who are accommodated in Alaska. That's, I think, the key point. And specifically in statute, the children's term contract members and include deaf, deafblind, intellectually disabled, developmentally disabled, health impaired, and other severely emotionally disturbed, and students with multiple disabilities. This is not coming from base 13-36-30. So, this is not directly and directly with school staff, teachers, and professionals and parents. That has been and especially important in this pandemic year. So, next, we go to the sectional analysis. It's very straightforward. There are two sections. Section 1 extends the termination date, December 30th, 2021, and Section 2 provides for an immediate effective date. Next is the fiscal law. And we will, as Scott going to point out, we will have the department. Using the fiscal note during the term meeting, and we recommend that first action under the formula. Tuesday is not the end of the list, if you have the second backside of the state's list. And then $18.65 multiplied by the statewide foundation average daily membership count plus the full student count compared with the previous fiscal year. And this rate has remained unchanged since 2013. The fiscal model recognizes that this is a case code to have grown from 216 students in 2012 to 335 students in 2020, a 63% increase, with no adjustment to this rate. And this is something the committee and the finance committee may wish to consider as future plan. So, going forward, the next part of the packet is a summary review request by the State Budget Audit Committee, and Governor Christopher's will work through this with you. The next section is a PowerPoint presentation, and that will be taken to our team, will offer the letter will work through that with the committee. The final section in the packet allows the board that will provide a list of school districts across the state who will be provided with these services. And that concludes my remarks, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Eichel, Representative Story. Any questions from the committee at this point? Keeping in mind that the fiscal note will be using the head of the department, it makes sense that we need that funding allocation until next week, which we have budget subcommittee on Friday. All right, seeing no questions at this time, I would like to call upon Patrick Pillay, Executive Director.
Excuse me,
provides additional funds for and this is in addition to the intensive needs funding that their school district may otherwise receive. This additional financial support is to help ensure the students affected by low business disabilities are receiving the free and appropriate public education that is required per state and federal laws. These services are available to district whose low incidence special education needs occur frequently, making it difficult for the district to serve the low number of students in need of a particular service. CSER recruits, trains, and retains education specialists to provide technical assistance and training to parents, students, and district staff without regard to location in the state. And I'd like to draw your attention to page 8 of the audit. Out of the map, and it shows the location and number of students served. This, as of February 2020, shows 335 students served by CSER across 48 school districts. Now, the same information you see summarized here is also in Appendix C to the audit beginning at page 27. And that's a table that takes this information and breaks it out by the low incidence disability category. So you can see what type of disabilities are being served in each of your more locations. For conclusions, we get on page 11. Overall, the audit concludes that CSER has served the public interest by assisting school districts in providing students affected by low incidence disabilities and education to meet the children's unique needs. This is by providing opportunities to enhance school districts' teachers and paraprofessionals' capabilities and by providing resources. We recommend the legislature extend CSER 8 years, which is the maximum extension allowed for extension. As part of the audit, we did send a survey to the school district special education director, and that's in all 15 school districts, and had a 59% response rate. Many are disappointed in the response rate that was met during the outbreak, the initial COVID. In general, the special education directors viewed CSER's services, their staff availability, and the expertise favorably. The survey questions and responses are included in Appendix C to the audit. Now, as Mary discussed on page 13, we discussed the statutory funding formula for CSER. It's unique. It's a rate of $18.65 rate multiplied by the state's average student membership. Again, it was set in 2013. It has not changed. Yet, CSER's caseload has increased 63%. We found that CSER's education specialists serving certain student categories were experiencing high caseloads. As of February 2020, the agency had 3 student education specialist vacancies. We do have one recommendation beginning from page 18. Auditors reviewed 42 student files during the audit and found 5 of the 42 students had disabilities that were identified on the referral form and reclassified by specialists. We didn't see much documentation as to why it had been reclassified. And for 4 of that, we didn't see any documentation about whether that revision was communicated to the school district. So we recommended to the executive director implement written procedures to ensure reclassification of students with more disabilities adequately coordinated and communicated. In regards to response to the audit, they begin on page 35. Generally, the commissioners of the Department of Education and Early Development, Commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Service, and the Key Support Trainer concur with the report conclusions and the recommendation.
Substantially, that the number of students served by CSER. And how does the funding formula relate to the number of students that are actually identified
compliance with disabilities. Now, Kevin, the actual formula is based on this disability. It's going to be a membership of all counties. So, regardless of how many students are served, if the 80 of the rate goes down, their funding would go down, which, if you look back in the future, maybe it is. Last call is that back in 2012, that rate that was set statute about less than 14 years, and it hadn't been changed. So now it's been in place for 8 years, and it hasn't been changed. So we do mention that it's some type of, there was a change in the formula that included, say, inflation or some other type of mechanism to allow the funding to change automatically without some kind of, action by the legislature. That would be a solution. I know there's some other solutions discussed as well, but we wanted to make sure we identified this as an issue for consideration.
I agree. That's an issue. So the number of students served appears to be rising relatively dramatically, while the general population is shrinking somewhat, and this year it shrank substantially. Again, that was due to COVID, but we had to serve the kids that come to the school next door.
That formula doesn't have to be changed. It doesn't have to be changed in any time that I've seen it here before. But it does have to be.
Survey in this case was an excellent means of obtaining that evidence.
Any further questions from the parents? Seeing that, thank you very much. Appreciate the concerns of the report. Next up, we have Special Education Service Agency Executive Director, Patrick Poulet. Let's see, Mr. Poulet. Go ahead and introduce yourself and your affiliation, and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Patrick Wise. I've been the executive director of CISO for the past 9 years. I joined the agency in 1994 as the health education specialist, making this my 27th year of CISO service. I will go through my 18 slides pretty quickly. please stop me at any time with questions. Next slide, please. This is the home page of CISA's website. It provides online access to program services and resources, the lending library, online professional development e-modules, and an easy process for school districts to submit online referrals for CISA service. The agency's mission reflects a focus on addressing the unique special education needs of students, parents, and teachers across Alaska's 54 school districts. Next slide, please. CISA's legacy of special education support evolved from the intent of Public Law 94-142, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act of 1975, reauthorized in 2004, and amended in 2015 as the Every Student Succeeds Act. The law mandates a free and appropriate public education to students with disabilities. CISA activity assists parents and school district staff made tangible through specialized educational interventions as services mandated by special education law. Next slide, please. The statute establishing CISA addresses technical assistance and service to students with low incidence disabilities. Low incidence disabilities is defined as occurring in less than 1% of the total population. The relative of the disability often means specialized services are not normally available. CISA affords such sites access to a specialist with an endorsement in a particular disability, in addition to other resources. Next slide, please. Although CISA Statute 1436-30B states that CISA shall focus on provision of low incidence disability services, it does on the eligibility of service in PS 1433.0 indicate that CISA may provide services to disability categories other than low incidence disabilities. It is through this qualification that CISA provides services to students with autism. Next slide, please. Slide 6, CISA's logic model captures the design process to deliver specialized services to parents, students, and school districts. The intent is to address the gap via solutions that promote availability of CISA services to on-site and distant support. This approach creates broad participant training to adjust staff turnover and promotes collaboration and networking amongst teachers and paraprofessionals. This in turn reduces isolation and ultimately promotes retention of teachers, especially in more remote areas of the state. Next slide, please. As part of the operational process, CISA created benchmarks to guide specialist delivery of a high standard of service. The benchmarks provide a threshold of expectation and guide specialist evaluation for continuous improvement. The flow of service delivery is designed to gather information and meet site needs. Next slide, please. Slide 8, demystifies technical assistance. A continuum of service includes student observations, assessments, educational interventions, modeling of strategies, in-service trainings, assistive technology, and many more pertinent activities based on requests from the child's educational team members. Specialists also work with vendors to troubleshoot assistive technology when teachers call with complaints of device non-functionality. Next slide, please. Using feedback from our annual public audit and sunset expert audits, CISA has designed a management system to include metrics for program and specialist evaluation. Most service satisfaction surveys are shared and discussed with individual specialists. Collective information is shared agency-wide to promote improvement and process and outcome. Next slide, please. In addition to specialist evaluation, the CISA management system is designed to collect data on various aspects of agency activity. Metrics focused on mission-centric activities such as site travel, creation of educational materials, differences in writing of student service reports. Data is analyzed to understand variables impacting CISA service and the CISA budget. Next slide, please. This slide is a visual example of the customized management system CISA design to ensure data-driven decision-making. Individual reports provide data on specialist activity, allowing information on productivity, number of reports completed within the agency timeframe of 10 working days, school and site requesting status, active student caseloads by district, location, and school. Next slide, please. Next slide, audits and the program component of annual public audits run tests of compliance with regard to process and procedure. This section of the database was created in response with specific data and with feedback from auditors. Following a recommendation of the CISA board to that range, CISA management worked to eliminate paper files. All of CISA's student record keeping is now electronic. The compliance element of the CISA database drives quarterly compliance and reviews. Next slide, please. Slide 13 captures in red the number of students attending elective schools in any given year between 2011 and 2020. The solid blue line captures the steadily increasing numbers of students on CISA loans and caseload. High turnover of staff in many districts or in many districts often drives the need for repeated training for new staff, especially first-year teachers who may be encountering any given disability for the first time. Next slide, please. Slide 14 is a history of CISA fund balance from 2013 and projected to 2023. The cycle captures low funds at the end of the sunset cycle, so last was 2013, higher funds at the middle of the cycle, where we strategically plan to arrive at the end of the cycle, and the trending to lower fund balance at the end of the cycle as a result of increasing costs. CISA's last funding increase was in 2013. At the end of fiscal year 2022, for cost increases, we anticipate using $578,000 for fund balance. This is the result of the impact of a CPI index increase of 6.3% over the last 7 years and compounding salary and health benefit increases to stay competitive with primary. Next slide, please. The recently completed legislative audit ensures that CISA meets the needs of students with low-income disabilities, provides professional development opportunities to teachers and paraprofessionals, provides special education resources to parents and school district staff, and concludes with a recommendation for an APA legislative reauthorization. Next slide, please. I'm sorry. So slide 16. CISA is requesting reauthorization to continue to provide the key services identified by the state of Alaska as being important to the full academic and social development of a child with a disability. This includes all the activities of technical assistance reviewed earlier in the presentation. Next slide, please. CISA's database allows us to run reports of agency productivity. The slide captures activities of technical assistance, number of schools and districts served, number of trainings conducted on-site, their distance delivery, and an analysis of expenses. And the next slide, slide 18, brings me some questions, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Manager. Just out of curiosity, how many employees does CISA have on the record?
Oops, not down for the chair. We have 20 total employees at this point. For the last 9 years, there's been only one administrator, that's myself, and we are in the process of planning we have a total of 14 specialists that travel out to school districts. We have one technologist, one librarian, and then the rest are program assistants. Advanced Storage for the Care. Yes, we have. Aside from my comment that we will be going into fund balance as of the end of 2022, up to this point we have had adequate funding to purchase the necessary resources requested for parents and teachers across the state. And we have been updating the resource library because the resource library allows school districts to test equipment or resources prior to purchasing. So it saves them the money from purchasing prior to the default that works for them. So to answer your question, yes, up to this point we have been able to provide enough resources. In addition, we've been fortunate that we have been hosting for more than the last 12 years the National Autism Resource Center. So through the ID Autism Program and the National Autism Resource Center, we make those resources available. So through the chair, the incentive to move towards distance education was both out of an availability of the technology and a recommendation of previous legislative audits. So there was a time at which, and it continues now as well, where the use of technology is seen as saving state dollars. So CCS invested in a full infrastructure of technology, and we have been using technology for the last few years, where we have on-site visits and then we supplement on-site visits with Zoom meetings. During the COVID times, one of the things that has become very clear is the necessity to be on-site to build relationships with families and observe students, because we found during COVID times that parents and teachers and professionals who have established relationships with our specialists continue to make requests for services as they face difficulties. And we found that people who did not have those relationships were frustrated and didn't know what to do but were not reaching out. So we have been, during COVID times, we specialists did not travel out to site at all. So all of our consultation was done during, through distance education. So right now we have a fully hybrid model of on-site when we can and follow up through distance education. We have Zoom platforms, we have both e-modules, we've made them available on websites, and so we've offered a full suite of distance education to school districts, parents, and health professionals.
Thank you.
No, we did not pay the fare. We did not receive any of those money. But some of the cash money, if I'm remembering correctly, was targeted at businesses that were in excess of 50 employees, and we are only 20, so we did not qualify for any cash money. Most of the activities are single student based because we are working with a team. So it's usually a team request for information. So usually activities are per student. The only times activities would not be per student was if a site requested an in service training for multiple teachers or the entire school. We've had many schools that request a full in service training at the beginning of school. So in August and September, we'll do in-service training for an entire school. That would be listed as one activity. But for most other times, it's individual activities per the request of the district team. That is correct. And we have become very innovative in the way we approach that. For many of our students with emotional disabilities where the school is in the crisis mode, we have, with the permission of the parents in the school, invested mesh cameras in the school so that our instructors can view the situation of the classroom in real time. Last Friday, we were dealing with a situation where the student was experiencing extreme stress and one or two members of the staff felt threatened, set for their safety. And so we were able to provide intervention techniques that the school was able to use to de-escalate that behavior. And actually, in some of the testimony from the special ed directors, you will notice that some of them will utilize the services, and when they de-escalate that behavior enough, they actually don't apply for intensive funding for those students because they've been stabilized or found an effective strategy that they don't require an aid to work in a one-on-one position. So we found different ways. Sometimes it's using Zoom because we're speaking with camera in a or the computer in the classroom and be able to observe the student. Other times it's the mesh cameras. We've gone low tech in terms of bringing flash drives out to school districts. We've tried anything and everything that makes it possible to assist the school district.
Are you saying best cameras is in the brand?
Yes, yeah, that's the one that we can use.
Great. So, in terms of the technology, you said you've been able to see that any CARES Act funding or the following Act in December or so far. But it seems to me that have you had to acquire technology, additional technology to assist you in delivering services remotely, since you have to require entirely distance delivery?
We did not have to do a massive upgrade because we were already using technology very effectively for the last 3 or 4 years. And so we already had most of the equipment that was required, and we just used specific applications that allowed us to do more. So the upgrade was not expensive in any way.
Great. Further
questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one other question, I just, being a retired teacher and working in our school district, actually persuaded that we're going to represent many schools through the month. And it is a long time, so they are a very valuable and meaningful resource for especially remote school districts. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Students in your school.
I don't have a 500 effective table. Our school is roughly
Thank you.
primary job is here, but I provide support. If they don't care, they don't want to make sure they get a contract or what we may have to get a contract. At the event, or what things are in our way.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This grant application to CSCAP is basically a training or qualifying organization for the teachers. Is that right?
It's not just that a teacher, but they work with families as well, too. They work with districts.
In our district, we had a special director that actually both go out to a lot of the other schools. We love to have a special education at every single school, but sometimes there's a shortage, and so our special director will go out and do all the paperwork and serve the kids that they can. So a lot of times, you know, the person being the one down that actually travels out to their school. And we're in the room because that is a little simpler than what is discussing.
Questions for Mr. Greasy. If not, thank you very much. Mr. Greasy, as far as spending your questions, question time with us this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Natalie Vaughn. Ms. Vaughn, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. If you would introduce yourself and your affiliation and proceed with the testimony.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me today. My name is Natalie Vaughn, and I am a student, and I have been teaching for 21 years, and I would say that we've been resourceful from the ability to just connect with me as a special education manager, that the interest is valuable. I do.
said that CSAP delivered a program that a particular child needed to do within 2 days. But this pandemic has just opened our eyes to the things that have been impacted. Did that come by way of the U.S. Postal Service? Did they have it air freighted? How did you get it within 2 days, considering the issues that people around the country have had with mail delivery? Thank you.